This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. Law and Behold is our ongoing series aimed at improving constitutional literacy among Malaysians, done in collaboration with the Malaysian Bar and the University of Malaya's Faculty of Law. On today's episode, Juliet Jacobs speaks to Emeritus Professor Datuk Dr. Shad Salim Faruqi and lawyers Surendra Anand and Firdaus Husni to walk us through Article 10 of the Constitution of Malaysia, which guarantees Malaysian citizens the right to freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, and freedom of association.
So welcome, everybody. We've got a full house today, and we are going to be talking about freedom of expression. So that is covered under Article 10 of the Constitution, which guarantees Malaysian citizens the right to freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, and freedom of association. So can we start off with what is meant by freedom of expression?
Yes. Actually, this freedom of speech and expression is a generic, very broad right. It's like a mighty stream fed by many, many small tributaries, in the sense that the Constitution doesn't only talk about freedom of speech, it says speech and expression.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the import, the significance of the words and expression are that it is freedom of speech and expression in all its forms. So whether it's by word of mouth, signs, symbols, gestures, art, music, internet, statues, even the manner in which you dress, bandana, a swastika, bandana on your forehead, a swastika on your arm, growing a beard, it's all part of freedom of speech and expression.
Or even maybe a Jedi outfit like Surin.
Yes, of course. And then, may I point out, freedom of speech and expression is tied up, is interconnected with many other rights. Those are the tributaries that contribute to the main. My freedom of religion cannot be expressed adequately unless I also have freedom of speech.
Right.
My freedom of speech cannot be expressed adequately unless I'm allowed to march. So the right to protest, the right to march is a freedom of speech and expression, because if I speak alone, no one hears. But if I could gather 50 people to march down the streets, then of course we cause ripples.
Mm-hmm.
My freedom of speech would be strengthened if I could form a persatuan, an association. So freedom of speech and expression is actually a generic right that covers many, many aspects. In our Constitution, Article 10 covers only three: speech, assembly, association.
Yeah.
But actually many other rights are interconnected, and that's fine. Rights are interconnected. The difficulty in constitutional law, however, is this: speech is subject to 16 restrictions.
16?
16. Okay. Actually, it's 8 in Article 10, Clause 2. B, then there are 4 in Article 10, Clause 4. Then there is Article 149, subversion. There is Article 150, emergency. And then there is, for Muslims, Article 11, Clause 4. So all in all, it's 16. But when it comes to assembly, when it comes to association, lesser number of restrictions. So that's the problem of drafting in our Constitution. Though we have a generic right, but different parts of it are subject to different number of restrictions, which I'm sure will cause problems for the judiciary. Nevertheless, this is not meant to be a condemnation. When the drafters were drafting, they saw each right as a pigeonhole, as a separate pigeonhole, which of course human rights are not. Human rights are all interconnected. Now, in the area of human rights, that's my last point I want to make, has been noted on an earlier session. These rights are not absolute. Parliament has the power to restrict them on specified, enumerated grounds.
Okay.
Not on any ground the government finds necessary. On specified, enumerated grounds. However, one big issue that is emerging in the area of freedom of speech and expression. Actually, it has been there for a number of years. Does this right also apply in the private sector? Or does it apply only in the public sector? So I join a club. I join a political party. Do I have freedom of speech and expression? I join your workplace. I join BFM. I dress in a particular way, which you don't like. Do I have, as long as I'm not violating, let's say, the rules of decency.
Sure.
Do you have the right to compel me to dress, express myself in a particular way? I grow a beard, you say. No, beards are not allowed in office. So I think that's one issue. Does the Constitution apply also in the private sector, or is it only in our relationship with the state?
I guess, you know, people want to know what is considered a form of expression. Maybe, Firdaus, you can help me explain that.
Yes, when we talk about expression, what I see, as far as I know, the Malaysian courts have not exactly explored in depth the extent of what is recognized as expression in Malaysia. But if one were to take the international standard as a guide, the United Nations actually provides, United Nations Human Rights Committee actually provides the extent broad range and give illustration as to what amounts to expression. So including what Prof has said earlier, political discourses, for example, that is a form of expression. Human rights discourses, what we are having now, that is a form of expression. Commentaries, journalism, cultural and artistic expression, also an expression. Teaching, what Prof is doing, that is a form of expression. And you're doing it very well. Religious discourse, also a form of expression.
Sure.
And even advertising, commercial advertising, that again is also a form of expression. And essentially what these are any form of idea or opinion capable of transmission to others.
Sure.
All right. So now that transformation of idea and opinion is one thing, but what about the means of disseminating or transforming that idea? And for that reason, freedom of expression would also cover books, newspapers, pamphlets, posters, banners, dress, like what Prof said earlier, even legal submissions, what the lawyers do, and whatever manners in audiovisual, electronic, internet-based medium. Those are all covered under freedom of expression.
Okay, so I was reading, when I was doing my reading, it said freedom of expression is a qualified right. What does a qualified right mean?
Yeah, so I think like Prof was saying earlier, there are certain restrictions to freedom of expression. And the more general one that is listed under Article 10.2a of the Constitution, I'm just going to read for a bit. One is interests of security, friendly relations with other countries, public order, morality, to protect privileges of parliament or any legislative assembly, or contempt, defamation, incitement to any offence. So the point here is that free speech or expression is not an absolute right.
Mm-hmm.
Parliament can restrict that right under these specific listed grounds. So when we explore it a bit further, essentially there are three broad qualifications before one can restrict free speech. Number one, there must be a law made by Parliament. The clause is very clear. It says Parliament may by law impose, etc., etc. So there must be first a law made by Parliament. That's number one.
Okay.
Number two, that law must fall within one of these restrictions that is provided for.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be public order, national security or whatever. So it can't be for any other ground other than what's listed down here. That's
under
number two.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not enough. The third and most important one for me is what you call proportionality. So the restriction must be proportionate to the harm that is sought to be addressed.
Okay.
So for example, movies. Let's say a movie contains nude and sexual scenes, for example, and there is maybe a morality basis to restrict that movie. Now, do you completely ban that movie, or do you perhaps put an age restriction to the movie and control your audience?
Right.
So that's where the proportionality doctrine comes in. You only do enough to address the harm. In this case, the harm is you don't want to show it to a certain target audience. people under the age of 18. So you set an age limit and you address that harm. You don't have to completely ban that movie. Mm-hmm. So that's why proportionality is very important when we look at restrictions.
So I guess it's safe to say that freedom of speech doesn't mean freedom from consequences.
Yes.
Okay, all right. And what other domestic laws restrict the freedom of expression?
Well, we have quite a number of laws that do it. I guess the more popular or infamous laws are the Sedition Act, for example, mm-hmm. the Printing Presses and Publications Act.
We know that well at BFM.
So you have a number of laws that
you
restrict
have
free
speech. Penal Code as well.
Penal Code, yes, a number of provisions in the Penal Code. But let's bear in mind, some of these laws are constitutional in the sense that they do fall within one of these restrictions that I've listed down earlier. There are some laws which don't. The Sedition Act is one clear law which I think does not fall within any of the allowed restrictions. The Printing Presses Publication Act, to a substantial extent, if you look at that particular provision where you can ban publications or restrict publications, actually mirrors Article 10.2a substantially. So that's one okay law, although there are certain questionable grounds. Certain provisions in the Penal Code, one clear one is criminal defamation. Although defamation is a ground to restrict free speech, you have defamation as a ground. But the further question we need to ask is it proportionate to criminalize defamation? Because we already have civil defamation where one can sue another for defamation and get injunctions and get damages. Do you actually need to criminalize defamation? I think international law position is quite clear. Criminal defamation laws is against free speech. So that's just a very quick snapshot example of certain laws that do not comply with Article 10.2a, but they are still there in our law books.
If I can add to that, there's also an argument that right to speech and freedom of expression in Malaysia should also include a facet of freedom of information. So that is that argument, and where that is concerned, Official Secrets Act is also one ordinary law that has received criticism because in some or if not most of the situations, we don't know why that particular document or information is considered official secret. And for us to be able to express properly, you need to be able to be given the proper information. And so that's the argument.
And I guess they say who gets to decide what is an official secret, right?
That is true.
In India, they have said that freedom of speech and expression includes the right to know. In other words, the right to information.
Yes. Yeah.
But in Singapore and Malaysia, the courts are quite clear. There's no right to know.
No right to know.
No right to
like,
know.
For example, if
there's
the
no
government
right to
refuses to release the API, Air Pollution Index, I cannot express my my disagreement with the way, for example, how you know the quality of air is being maintained if I don't know what the air pollution index is. So
that sounds rather twisted. So then when is it justified to restrict the freedom of expression?
Well, I suppose there are certain scenarios, going back to, for example, the earlier session we had, where certain of these restrictions will be engaged. So there might be certain scenarios where national security is at stake, public order is at stake, and then it might be justifiable. So just one clear example. Under international law, governments have a duty to address incitement of violence and discrimination, what is more commonly known as hate speech. So I think that's one category where the government needs to do something proportionately. So, for example, when we talk about hate speech, it has to be specifically incitement of violence and discrimination and intolerance. And again, you have to go back to your public order exception. So I think during the first session, we gave an example where context is very, very important. Right now, the problem in Malaysia is we have a whole list of laws that are very content-based. For example, insulting religion is a crime immediately. Insulting someone could be a crime. Sedition, for example, you have certain examples of what is sedition. But you're not looking at context in all of this. It's all content-based. So end of the day, to determine whether something offends public order, you need to look at context. If I'm saying something in this close circle, in this crowd, it could not be affecting public order. But if I go and do it in a crowded area with a certain target group, who's the speaker, how influential I am, am I able to govern or control public opinion? all these factors are relevant in determining that restriction. So it always has to be context-based and not content-based.
Okay.
I also think one has to be mindful that when you talk about freedom of speech and expression, it's the content, because more often than not, what we see is rather than, for example, they are vigilantes who will disrupt, you know, assemblies or disrupt a forum, government or the police tend to err in the sense that restricting the speakers who is practicing its freedom of expression, rather than applying the normal laws to prevent these vigilantes from coming in and disrupt the forum. Mm-hmm. What I'm trying to say is there is this fine line when you talk about offending sensibilities. What is offensive to me might not be offensive to you.
Yep.
Yeah, and so I think that fine line one has to try to always tread carefully.
I just wanted to go back to something that you were saying, Suren. You know, it's also the context of where it was said, right? So let's say I am saying something insulting in my private Facebook group, but somebody screen caps that and shares it to everybody else. And so now it's gone to a public forum. What does the law say with regard to that?
Yeah, that's a bit difficult. And that's the thing with social media now.
Yeah,
it's changed the way these sort of things are being approached. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, classically, if you were to say it in a closed group outside social media, I don't think it would have been a problem.
Mm.
But now, if you put it on your page, so that one of two ways you can look at it. First of all, there is one approach where you look at intention. It's the intention of the speaker, whoever posted the comment. If your intent was to incite violence or discrimination to a larger group, then it's only then that it's an offense, for example. So in that scenario, your intention might not have been to address a larger group. It might be to that one specific group. So it could have been okay. But you perhaps should have known that if there might be a possibility, a reasonable possibility that your comment might be screenshotted, distributed on WhatsApp, and you should have known that in the current climate, it's going to go viral and it's going to cause some problems. Mm-hmm. So there is that gray area. And to be fairly honest, I'm really not sure where to lean on this one. So for example, Facebook, you have a lot of scenarios now where you have comments, some terrible comments being made on Facebook, which is clearly hate speech. For example, I saw one comment after the Women's March of people saying certain people should be physically harmed because of the views that they hold. For me, that's hate speech.
Mm-hmm.
But it's on Facebook. How does the government then regulate? How the government can't bring down that content themselves. Facebook can do it. Should Facebook then be regulated?
Mm.
Should Facebook be subject to certain laws?
Mm.
And this is a discussion that's been happening all around the world. So when it comes to social media, to be fairly honest, there's just a lot of grey area at the moment.
Right.
Yeah, I think if something is right, then correspondingly it should also be a responsibility. So if I have a right to social media, then I should also have responsibilities on the social media. Because I'm worried as a teacher, as a parent. I'm worried that people are using social media these days basically to defecate in the public domain.
With the anonymity that the internet provides, right? You can say whatever you want. But
as Suren said, this is a matter where things are not so clear-cut. We have to do some more thinking.
Mm-hmm, yes. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I cannot then just say that is my freedom of speech, that it's provided under the Constitution, right?
Yep, yep.
You can be charged. We don't have any laws for hate speech here in Malaysia, right, that criminalizes hate speech. We don't, I think.
We do actually have general laws under the Penal Code. I think it's Section 505 that talks about public mischief, and it does talk about public peace and public order.
Mm-hmm.
So those provisions can cover hate speech, actually.
Okay.
Because they are very general provisions which will cover instances of hate speech.
Mm-hmm. 298.
Yeah, and 298 of the Multimedia and Communications Act. But although that's a very controversial provision, because it also covers annoyance, annoying someone.
There's also 298 capital A of the Penal Code, wounding religious feelings of a person.
Yeah, then again, religious feelings, whether or not that's compatible with, exactly. Free speech is another controversial area.
Yeah, because how do you, especially with regard to, let's say, defamation, for example, how do you actually decide whether something is considered defamatory or whatever? That has to go to the courts, I suppose, to decide
and religious feeling defamation, the problem is, let's just accept that this is not really only a Malaysian problem or an Asian problem, actually.
Mm.
You have many countries, for example, in Europe, like memorial laws or anti-Holocaust laws, for example. So you cannot deny the fact of the Holocaust happening. And the very fact of you denying it is a criminal offence in some European countries. Now, that's against international human rights standards. And in some countries, for example, there was this very famous case in Austria. It's called the Otto Preminger case, where the Otto Preminger Institute came up with certain movies about satire on Christianity. So there were some absurd scenes about Jesus Christ.
Sure.
And they wanted to show this, screen these movies. But there was a clear warning that it would contain such content.
Right.
So what happened was the institute was prosecuted and the movie was banned completely. It went to the European Court of Human Rights and ultimately they upheld the ban. Surprisingly, they could have said, look, it's a private screening. No one's forced to watch it. The warning was quite clear. So it's proportionate. I mean, you've already restricted it in that sense.
Mm.
But yet they banned it. And one of the reasons of the court was that there was a right not to be religiously offended. That's a very controversial decision, which drew a lot of criticism. Point I'm trying to make is this particular topic of insulting religious feelings is not just a sensitive, a controversial topic here. It is a controversial topic all around the world. Again, when we talk about it, we just have to go back to the allowed restrictions, public order. If I'm going to insult someone's religious feelings, is that in itself going to cause disruption to public order?
Mm-hmm.
That's the important question that
I think when you talk about religious feeling, it is clearly it's a situation where one's freedom of expression and one's freedom of religion. We can see how these two meet. And what the international community has said, that when you talk about religious expression, freedom of religion in this sense is about protecting the individual, the believer, the follower, not about protecting the religion, which most people think is the case.
Right.
So that's what one another perception that I think we have to correct.
Yeah, I guess it just goes back to who decides then, right? So it will have to be argued out in court then if somebody, like, I mean, we've seen recent cases of people being arrested for insulting Islam. There was another person who was arrested and charged for insulting Hinduism. So, I mean, they were actually charged. They were actually put in jail. Does that then contravene what is afforded to them under the Constitution?
Look, grey area, but my personal view is that it is not inconsistent with the Constitution. I mean,
sure,
what they have said.
Mm.
So the fact that they've been charged and prosecuted to me is not correct. Because the fact is, again, you come back to public order, national security, etc.
Mm.
And I just don't see it as being disrupting public order. Now, while it could go to the extent of incitement of violence and discrimination, but then again, that's a very high threshold.
Yeah.
And if you look at just perhaps one isolated comment where a very rude comment was made towards religion, that in itself to me should not be made a criminal offence. And I think international law on this is also quite clear. Unless and until you can take it to the level of incitement of violence and discrimination, actual incitement, then it should not be made subject to criminal proceedings.
So let's take the Women's March. So now they are being investigated, correct?
Yes.
All right. So let's just say they go on the thing that they were expressing what demands they wanted, what sort of rights they wanted for women, right? But let's say somebody says they were inciting women to, you know, bring down the patriarchy, and therefore that is, you know, going to start affecting public safety and those sorts of things. I mean, what happens in situations like that?
But it's even like while saying it, you can kind of guess that's...
can see it.
Yeah, some people might not be able to see it. But then again, so you need to look at it from an objective perspective. Is there any real link between what they have been demanding?
Mm-hmm.
And is there any actual public disorder that's happening, or any real likelihood of it happening?
Okay, but under the Constitution, were they allowed to march to...
Yes, so the right to peacefully assemble is expressly provided for. And just to correct another misconception, there is no need for a permit to peacefully assemble.
Exactly.
There is a legal requirement to notify the authorities, mm-hmm. 10 days before,
mm-hmm.
But there is no requirement for a permit. So they were allowed to peacefully assemble. They were allowed to express their demands. And I don't think there should be any form of criminal proceedings for that.
Mm-hmm.
In the USA, many cases, they have used the clear and present danger test.
Mm.
Mm.
So an action cannot be punished, cannot be prosecuted, unless there is a clear and present danger that it would lead to disorder. And that's for the courts to decide. So just for some women to say they want patriarchy to be ended... It's like me saying, I want dictatorship to come to an end, or I want democracy. So I would agree. I don't see any reasonable likelihood, a clear and present danger, that the nation will catch fire and burn because women say they want patriarchy to come to an end. Patriarchy has scores of dimensions.
Yeah. I think just because the word public order is, you know, thrown in the ring, it does not mean, oh, okay, then, you know, we should stay away from that. I think we all should be able to question, is that really public order? Is, first of all, is the assembly peaceful? And second, are the demands that the women's march organizers, are those demands lawful? They want a lawful change to the law, for example, in order to break patriarchy in addressing issues of child marriages, for example.
Yeah.
Are those demands according to the law? Mm-hmm. And if it is according to the law, I don't see why there is issue of public order here or public security.
Okay. So if I wanted to make a report, then, you know, that's fine. That is also me expressing my freedoms as promised under the law. So, but so everything again will just need to...
Don't forget, sometimes it can be a crime to waste police time.
Who decides that? Who decides that, Professor?
The police can prosecute a person who actually wastes the precious time of the police.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we should be careful about making police reports. At every small matter, we go make a police report. We are wasting police time.
But I think we're seeing a lot of that happening now,
more
and more. So, I mean, what would you want people to understand about freedom of expression? I mean, what is the core thing that, you know, every Malaysian should know? Yes, you are afforded this under the Constitution, but what do you always need to keep in mind, you know, when you want to express that or when you want to, well, utilize that right?
Well, I mean, I suppose it's the status quo is that all of us have the freedom to express ourselves and to speak and to assemble. That's the starting point.
Mm-hmm.
The exception to it is to restrict it. And I think right now, the climate and the conception of the people is that whenever something that's said that you might not find, you might not agree with, you might get offended by, the immediate knee-jerk reaction is to prosecute, put them in jail, criminalize.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people often forget that there are other means of addressing the scenario. Number
touches.
One. And number two, the starting point should always be counter speech. So if you don't agree with someone, then you have the right to speak out and say why I don't agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
And the same goes to mild forms of hate speech. If someone comes out and say, I don't like your religion for reason A, B, and C, you come out and say, hold on a minute, you might be a bit wrong. That's not what my religion is. My religion is A, B, and C. There should be more open discourse on things like this. I think that's what we are entirely missing at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Moment someone says something, the next thing you know, charge him in court, prosecute him. But there's no counter discussion, and the discussion is left hanging at a very shallow and minimal level. That's all we get. So right now, insulting Islam, for example, first thing is criminalized.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no counter public debate on, okay, maybe what he's saying is not correct, and Islam is actually much more than that, for example.
Mm-hmm.
That wider discussion that we're having now is just not happening.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people need to understand that the best solution to what you find offensive or you disagree with is to actually speak out and you talk about it back again, but not to shut someone down by criminalizing whatever he has said.
I guess the argument then is that it can just descend into that though.
Probably, but until it descends into this whole public chaotic thing,
mm-hmm.
I think the discussion should be allowed to happen.
Okay.
And we are not allowing that to happen right now.
When you look at the comments, say on social media, on YouTube or Twitter, And the very fact that some of these comments even descend into rape threats, even descend into death threats and calling people some racial slurs and asking them to go back to their country, I think that in itself a reflection of the fact that Malaysia still has a long way to go when it comes to a mature enjoyment of freedom of speech and expression. You wanna have an open, healthy discussion with well-substantiated arguments, but you don't see that happening, especially when you look at social media. Just because one is protected by the screen, they can say anything they want without responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, yes, what Suren said earlier, freedom of speech and expression does not equate to freedom not to be offended.
Mm-hmm.
And there are laws, but one has to take into account that, you know, like what he said earlier, if you don't agree and then you engage in a discussion, if what you resort to is filing a police report and calling that person with a racial slur, that's not engaging in a healthy discussion. That's not what freedom of speech and expression is all about.
Mm-hmm. And also that freedom of speech doesn't mean freedom from consequences.
Yeah.
Any last message you'd like to leave us with?
Yeah, well, perhaps add a word of caution here. I generally agree that the best way to counter hate speech or irresponsible speech or abuse of freedom is to engage with the other side. But what I want to caution is this, that actually our education system has to change. People have to be told that truth is multiple. Mm-hmm. People have to be told that there are many views of the garden of truth. There are many views of it. And what they were brought up with is not necessarily the whole truth. It's only one part of the truth. So we've got to democratize education. We've got to democratize the way we bring up our kids. We've got to tell them that differences do not necessarily mean that the other person is evil. It's just that that's their way of life. So while I agree with you on what the law ought to be, law has to operate in a social context, in a cultural context. And that's where I think we need drastic changes. We, in this society, shield people from diverse views. Mm-hmm. So, for example, our education system, more and more kids of different religions and races don't study together. If they don't learn together, how will they live together? They don't study about other religions. Oh, they could get confused. The best way actually to appreciate your religion, to respect your religion, would be to learn a little bit about others.
Yes.
So I think that's one cultural change that is needed. Changing the law alone won't be enough. Mm-hmm. Law operates in a social context. There are people who get worked up at the slightest difference of opinion.
Yeah.
Because that cultural trait of observing differences not as a threat, but as an opportunity to explore new venues. That cultural trait is not there as yet.
That was Juliet Jacobs speaking to Emeritus Professor Dr. Shad Salim Faruqi, Surendra Anand and Firdaus Husni about Article 10 of the Constitution of Malaysia, which guarantees Malaysian citizens the right to freedom of speech, freedom of assembly and freedom of association. If you missed any part of this interview or any previous Live and Learn interviews, you can search for the podcasts at bfm.my, on the BFM app or on Spotify. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.